Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. My name's Eric. With me is my co-host, Jim.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
And Ray is actually in Las Vegas on site of the 2022 Las Vegas Open. Yep, he's at the Rio. So we hope to
Where's
get...
Las Vegas? Oh, I thought he's like at the Las Vegas Open. I'm like, wait, isn't that next year?
Yeah, no, he's on site there. He's checking out the hotel as we speak. So it should give us a full rundown of what we can expect of the new venue from a non-Fetful G standpoint. So be pretty cool to find out how it is. In the meantime, we've had quite a few news in terms of some new models and a few new rules here and there since our last discussion. We've had quite a few tournaments this past weekend and a couple things I wanted to follow up from last week as well. So, Jim, let's get into your favorite faction there, Thousand Sons. We've got a new model.
Yeah, Infernal Master. Kind of cool. I like the Baby Screamers. He doesn't look quite as, like, I guess, unique because... I don't know. The Thousand Sons have a really cool kit in the Exalted Sorcerer kit. It's like a multi-part kit that makes like multiple characters. So it's kind of weird to get like another character. But I guess, I mean, when I think about it, we kind of just have, that's really the only character we have outside of Exalted Sorcerers and special characters. Cause like we don't get things like Warp Smiths or Dark Apostles or other things. So I guess it makes sense to have more characters. Feels like the army would rather have normal units than characters right now.
Right. And you had a pretty interesting take on what you think the role of this model is.
Yeah, I think the Infernal Pack sound an awful lot like prayers. So I'd imagine this model, and even the language as far as like whether they're manifested or not, or if the packs are successful, has a lot of similar vibes to like a chaplain prayer. So I'd imagine these are probably the Thousand Sons equivalent of like Dark Apostles. That's my guess.
I'd be curious if they, you know, gives us any windows into what how the new demon rules will kind of jive as well, but or if the demons will even stay in the Thousand Sun Codex.
Yeah, well, I'd imagine they take a cue from Death Guard and they don't include the demons rules in the Codex. One thing that I always thought didn't make any sense was the fact that the rules were in the Codexes to begin with, because it's not really clear. Like when you read that book, say for instance the Chaos Space Marine book as it currently exists with all the demon rules, there's no place in it that actually tells you that by including those units that are in the troop section in your Chaos Space Marine book, you actually lose all your faction bonuses. The only reason you'd know that is if you read the Battleforge rules in the main rule book, and then you combine that with the fact that and then you cross-reference that with the various faction keywords that are on the demon data sheets and the Chaos Space Marine data sheets. And thus, by having all three of those things together, coming to the conclusion that if you include these troops in the troop section, which seems like would be a normal thing, your army actually loses all its bonus. So it's just, in general, it was very unintuitive how that even worked. And then the reason that they obviously put them in was for the purposes of summoning. But the thing is like you can summon everything in the demon book. So why would you just at that point include just four units? Why don't you just include the entire demon codex, right? So just all the reasoning and the reason they were included felt like it just made no sense. So I'm just glad that they removed it. And for new players, it was very confusing as well, because as I said, it's not clear why those data sheets are in the book, but really you're not supposed to use them unless they're summoned. But the summoning rules aren't in the book either. They're in a different book. So it's like, it's just like a bunch of really bad reasons for those to be in the book. So I hope they're not in the book. I was a little disappointed to hear though that I would have loved it if by like the first kind of few sentences of the fluff, the storyline for the character mentioned like packs with demons. So I thought it would have been really cool if like they did the cool thing, which is actually included demons as like takeable units in the book, because Thousand Sons seems to be a codex ripe for including Zinch demons, and they're fairly tight on data sheets. So doing almost making Thousand Sons almost into like a Zinch Demon Kin style book, right, would have been really cool. But obviously we can't have that. So it sounds like we're just going to get some of these Infernal packs, I guess. So, but I guess I'll take it rather than nothing.
Yeah. I'm still kind of confused in terms of, yeah, what their game plan is. Are we going to go to these Demonkin style books where all the ruinous powers are in one book? Or are we going, you know, mishmashing the whole idea that Chaos Space Marines are, you know, pirates again, like the old 5th edition book that was terrible. So, I don't know. It's a little apprehensive at this point. Be curious to see how it all works. Or is it going to be the one of the few books that allows souping you know, you're allowed to bring in Chaos Demons to a Battleforge Chaos Space Marine army without losing things. So I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to say. And the unfortunate part is because of the delays, like, even if there was plans to do something cool like that, it's, you kind of don't see the full picture for quite a while. So I'll be curious how summoning works moving forward. That could be a big thing. And then, you know, it's not clear if we'll ever get like a, almost like, you know, obviously Space Marines have, you know, 7 supplement books basically beyond the original Chaos Space Marine Codex. So I doubt we'll see anything like that for Chaos, but it'll be interesting if we got like a Demonkin supplement that had rules for like, say, Demonkin lists for all 4 of the gods or something like that. Even if that wasn't in the main book, that'd have been really cool.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool. Also just thinking, I'm surprised they just didn't set it up to say where they do Loyalist Space Marines. You know, you've got the core book and then you have all your supplements.
Yeah. One thing I thought was interesting though is they do mention that Thousand Suns are getting 2 expanded disciplines, which leads me very heavily to believe that when the book comes out, they will no longer have access to Dark Creticus, which means no more Warp Timing Magnus. So hear it now, quote me later, but I bet you that is the case because they already nerfed it for Mortarion, and I bet you Magnus loses that ability as well. I bet you they just have their 2 Thousand Sun specific spell lores, and that's it.
Right.
And that includes the loss of Dark Creticus. So.
Yeah, you lose Warp Time, you probably lose Death Hex, and also...
Exactly, and you won't be able to bring them in. Well, Death Hex you could bring in, but you won't be able to bring in Warp Time just because it's Legion locked now. So
right, got it.
It's no longer available for Thousand Suns outside of unless it's from a Thousand Sun Psyker.
Wonderful. All right, we'll see what they. Hopefully, there'll be some replacements that are as good or have similar.
Yeah, I mean, I really hope my wish beyond all wishes is, you know, if we do get 2 spell lores, maybe we get something similar to Eldar, where our spells have 2 sides to them. That would be really cool. So that you essentially can take 2 powers, but you kind of get 4.
Right.
That'd be really cool. I'm interested to see if we get some sort of like increasing bonus, like the tides that the Grey Knights got, or something that boosts psychic powers over time. More than anything, I'm just really hoping that whatever Legion trait they decide on, it actually works for more than just the characters in the army. Because right now, obviously, our Legion traits only really work for the sorcerers, which means that all of our other troops don't really get anything. So it's kind of disappointing.
Right. Well, keep our eyes open for that as well. I didn't see a whole lot of other news on Grey Knights other than the model we talked about last week there. So it's like, interesting. Like I said, a curious release. Why did they show it off that day? And it was kind of one shot. It was kind of weird. So
it does give me hope that Thousand Suns are not as far off as we want, because it seems weird. I guess it seems weird to me that they would randomly show this model on like a random Monday if there isn't plans to release it fairly soon.
Right.
No way. It just doesn't. Yeah. So I'm hoping maybe, I mean, I'm doubtful that this actually happens, but maybe like last week of August, because I'd assume we've already seen the pre-orders for next week. And so we know that Orc Codex won't be out next week. Neither will the regular kits. And I doubt they're going to do a week after that with like everything. So I'd imagine that September is probably closer to what we're looking like for the army box. And I'm really curious if the Codex and the army box will come out at the same time or how that's going to work. I'm almost tempted to pick up the army box, even though I probably don't need any of the models except the Infernal Master, just because, I don't know, Grey Knights are pretty cool. So playing a Grey Knight army could be fun as well. So
right.
Who knows?
Speaking of orcs,
one of them invariably be broken.
Yeah, exactly. One of the two.
One of the 2 books will be broken. So hopefully I can play one of the 2 armies.
I hope you're leaning more towards the one, because you've already painted up, what, 3 Mutalith? What are they called? The Mutalith Mauler?
I got 1 Mutalith in box, though. I bought it just because I figured I'd hedge my bets for when the book came out. But I'm not, given the fact that, you know, one thing that I am able to look at is the points. And given the points from the chapter approved are supposed to be the updated points, the fact that a lot of the data sheets didn't change in points actually gives me very low confidence that the stats changed quite a bit. My guess is that everything's fairly similar, and we didn't get a ton of changes. So
one army that is seeing a ton of changes, and some people are already hedging their bets for this, is the Nor-Orc Codex. We've seen a lot of previews, it was kind of snapshots of the movie. So it's kind of not really sure if all the, like the -1 resistance for the new ramshackle rule, -1 damage, if it's under strength 8, We've seen that in other armies. I guess the hardest part, I'm still trying to wrap my brain around this. What is the new orc army going to look like? Are we going to still see 200 boys on the table?
I hope not. I mean, I'm hoping that a lot of the other data sheets became more viable. I know they've lost some of the things that made boys as good. Like, there's no more Green Tide from what I saw. There's no more Fight Twice on the orc boys from what I saw. So it seems to me Chop has obviously got a lot better. Obviously, T5 is nice. And the KFF actually got quite a bit of an improvement with it being a 9-inch bubble for all units, not just models, which means that can definitely do like a fairly large KFF horde with and there's a stratagem actually to increase it to 5++. So, you know, you could do a fairly resilient boy blob. And given it's 9, what is that? So 30 boys is going to be 180 points, or sorry, 270 points, right? Because they're 90 points for 10.
Okay. I didn't know what they were. So
it's 9 points each. Yeah. So it's 9 points each. So 270 points for 30 boys. I mean, seems pretty good. Even 20 boy units, I think at 180 points is actually probably a better value, given that just controlling 30 boys is pretty cumbersome. So the vehicles seem to have gotten a lot better, especially with things like the custom jobs. But they did lose some things, like their charge abilities are slightly worse as far as like advance and charge and reroll charges. It's not quite as strong because they can't reroll both dice, one or either. No, they just reroll a single dice. And the fact that a lot of their weapons went to DACA is nice, but DACA weapons can't assault, advance, and shoot, which might end up being a kind of net loss for their abilities to fire. So we'll see.
If I read this correctly, and I could be wrong, is it seems also like the mob rule changed. You know, the old, you know, if you've got enough boys around you, you add that to your leadership. It seems that does not the case anymore.
Yeah, I didn't actually get a chance to look at that, so I'm not quite sure what it says now.
Yeah, but I'm not sure what that would change, but I remember looking at it going, that doesn't sound... Yep. See if I can bring it up as I'm talking.
Which I think is good, because it essentially made orcs immune to leadership, which... Yeah. Having a whole army of fearless isn't something that I thought was a really good mechanic. It'd be one thing to give them like plus one or two to their leadership, but when you get like plus 13, plus 12, or anything crazy, like stuff crazy like that, and your leadership's like 26, it makes it completely stupid. So
I remember being very frustrated with it. You know, you kill 27, but there's, you know, two other units nearby. I was like, oh, I guess they're not running. I'm okay. That's
weird. Yeah, exactly.
But, I did remember once I was able to at least cut off part of that. So the guy was like, you're more than 6 inches away from all your other friends. Like,
yeah, I'd imagine. I'm hoping that I guess the book seems to me so far, just on like my initial pass of the leaks, that it seems to be closer to what Sisters has, which is like an upgrade in some areas, a side grade in some areas, and then some things that were maybe more dominant have been kind of pushed to the back burner. So it's kind of like still a strong book, or it's a slightly stronger book, but in different areas and different things are strong. Which is kind of what happened to Sisters. So that kind of feels like what's happened with the book, which I don't think is a bad thing. I'm glad that the mech guns are no longer as oppressive as they were before, and also limited in number. But the Beast Snagger stuff looks cool, but a lot of it, you know, is keyed off monsters and vehicles, and knowing that how the monster and vehicle meta is not really a thing right now, I'm curious to see like if people end up running a lot of them.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised by that. It's like, okay, are we missing something? Actually, it's funny you mentioned, you know, the vehicle meta isn't a thing. And then the last few lists, we've been seeing a ton of dreadnoughts all of a sudden. So maybe that's what takes them out. I don't know.
Yeah, well, dreadnoughts seem to be the AdMech boogeyman, the only thing that really beats AdMech these days. So
right, ran into a similar list to that today. As a matter of fact, got a game in. I was like, oh. See lots of machines on 2 feet. Also, that'd be interesting. So,
yeah, I think the natural damage, like minus one damage on dreadnoughts, it's actually quite a strong ability that they just all get naturally. So,
yeah, I am not finding this. Yeah, the new walk thing also doesn't make sense to me at all. But I'm sure it will once you actually get the codex in your hands. But it's kind of weird how you get like the initial walk, then it's stage two. Does that last for the rest of the game? Is that for another turn? I'm very confused. But so I have a feeling there's probably like a paragraph missing that's in the book. So, and topic that we talked about, actually you talked about at length on your other show, is can you crawl your way back from redemption, from being a player who was not doing so well? And we didn't have time during our show last week to go over the top five in all the tournaments. But interesting, last week, sixth place performance in a GGT last week was TJ Lanigan. So is he on the way back, or is just, you know, one step closer to redemption, or is it just still, you know, in vain at this point?
Yeah, well, I know. Anthony Birdsong, who's the owner of Tables and Towers, which is where the G2 is held, the person invited him. Anthony's a friend of mine. We actually talked on the phone last week. Well, a bunch of stuff, but one of the things that he firmly believes in the idea that people can change, and I know he knows TJ, and you know, the only way people will be able to redeem themselves is if they show that they've changed, right? So it's impossible to redeem if you disappear. And I know there are certain players like Josh Steth who basically just kind of quit the game with bad reputations, and even if they come back in 5 years, they're going to still have those bad reputations because they never took the steps needed to kind of redeem themselves. So, you know, good on TJ for like not hiding and attending the event. I think that's a good like thing for him, and hopefully you know, he played a clean game, and from my understanding, he did actually end up losing in the final round, eventual winner. But yeah, I know I'm sure everyone is watching him like a hawk. So yeah.
All right. So we'll like to see how this progresses throughout the rest of the season, but good to see him out there. I think you're right. Josh Steth is, yeah, kind of been on a milk carton of late, and but the reputation lives on. So it's a little difficult to see what's going to happen with that.
Yeah. And like, look, we all make mistakes. I mean, this is kind of the first time TJ has been, I guess, caught. So ideally, you know, if he took responsibility for it. He didn't deny it. He didn't try to pretend he didn't do it. And now he's trying to be better. And ultimately, I believe in that. I believe in that people should be able to, there has to be a way for people to come back from mistakes, whether they cheated or not. You know, we gotta show a little bit of compassion and mercy in the community. And obviously if TJ does it again or is caught again, then that's a different story. And, you know, you'll hear me probably sing a very different tune. But you know, everyone makes mistakes, does dumb things. I know I've done my share of dumb things in the past, so like to think about people's better natures. Yep. Ultimately.
So be good to see. Now again, like I said, good story to follow along.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
Hey listeners, this is Raymond with the Extreme Honest Podcast here to talk to you about KR cases. If you're like me and you're constantly looking for that better way to store your armies, then look no further than KR cases. That's right, this is the foam company known for their soft blue foam in cardboard cases. They're a great way to mix and match whenever you're heading out for that next tournament. You can just swap out those boxes and no need to worry about switching the foam in and out. They're sturdy. The boxes help protect your models. And when you order, they come fast, the order is right, and for a better price than the other guy. So go to krcases.com. And when you place your order, be sure to mention the Extreme Honest Podcast.
Next weekend, we will have the Lone Star Open, the second of the FLG series of big events. So look forward to seeing that. But this past weekend, we had quite a few events already. And kind of let's go over those real quick in terms of their top five. So the first one, we actually head north of the border to the, if I can pull it up, Nurgling's Hate Hand Sanitizer GT, which is one of the more creative names we've seen. And your top five looks something like this. Mark Watts in fifth with Cult Mechanicus. Fourth place, Byron Livingston with Slaanesh Demons. Third place, Pascal Dominic with Necrons. Second place, Rhett Tremblay with Imperium. And in first place, Riley Tremblay with Eldari. And Riley was actually the only player to go undefeated, a perfect 5-0. So interesting. Cult Mechanicus, yeah, obviously making top five, but kind of a diverse top five there, which I was a little surprised by.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have much to say about AdMech anymore. I mean, we all know how impressive the army is. Not really impressed by anyone that is winning with them, to be honest. It's just, especially with the list that people are running. So it is what it is.
Moving on over to the Bold City Freedom Fisticuffs GT. And I believe this was in Florida. Fifth place, Gabriel Rochelot with Imperial Knights. Fourth place, Ryan Jones with Imperial Knights. What's going on here? Third place, Benjamin Cromer with Ultramarines. Second place, Jack Harpster with Adeptus Sororitas. And the leader, Dan Masal. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. Masal, a slave? I'm not sure. Sorry, Dan. Butchered your last name. With Cult Mechanicus. And Dan also being the only player to go 5-0. But what's up with Imperial Knights? Fourth and fifth place.
Well, if you think about it, they're actually a fairly good list into AdMech. If you can go first, take out the chickens early with all your night shooting. The Rangers and stuff don't actually have a lot to deal with full night. So in those Ranger heavy lists, remember, Inertrons don't work against vehicles, right? So if you can get in early to pick up the chickens with your knights, which are able to do that, it can actually be fairly resilient against the rest of the AdMech list. So especially because the stomps are really good at killing infantry, they can shoot into combat. You know, they definitely can have a bit of counter to the AdMech lists. So I do think there's maybe a few knight lists there that can kind of take on AdMech. You can obviously got to get first, but
right.
That vehicle heavy meta I think is actually pretty good.
Does it make sense to go all knights, or is it just splash one or two knights into a list?
Sorry,
is it better to just go all knights, or does it make sense to splash like a one or two knights into an already Imperial list?
I don't know. I haven't really looked at those knight lists, but I think just given the way that the knights army works right now, I think having just pure knights is probably the best way to go.
Okay, sounds good. We'll have to watch to see how that develops. The Victorian Throwdown, which surprisingly was in Michigan of all places. Your top five looks something like this. Alan Hernandez continues his summer truck across the United States, this time landing in Michigan. Comes in fifth.
Is he actually trucking across the states?
He's got his pickup truck, and he drove all the way from California to New Jersey for the Atlantic City Open, and then moving his way to Michigan. I've been following him on Facebook. Yeah, he's been pretty much driving all over the place.
That's fun.
Yeah. He does this every so often, so it's pretty cool. So Alan actually is playing Chaos, which I thought was surprising. I thought he was more of a Thousand Suns player, but actually right before that he was playing Harlequin, so I have to double-check what he's playing at these days. Fourth place was Jeffrey Jozak with Death Guard. Third place, Joe Romanui. Probably butchered that. Sorry, Joe. With White Scars. Second place with Cult Mechanicus, Alexander Shifko. And in first place, Tom Ogden with Dark Angels. Both Tom and Alexander were the only players to go 5-0 in that particular event.
Yeah, again, nothing to say there.
Yeah,
it's more dark, more ridiculous.
Yeah, but Dark Angel's just one of those armies. I'm glad they finally got it.
But I'm pretty sure second place is also AdMech. That was 5-0. So the only reason that.
Yeah.
So they also had another undefeated AdMech player at the top two.
Yep. So exactly correct.
So it's like, I don't know. AdMech basically won as well. Basically four events. They went perfect in five events, all four events. They just didn't technically win them all.
Right. Make our way to good. Yeah, exactly. Make our way to Indianapolis, Indiana. There I can talk. Chaos Storm Grand Tournament. Your top five looks something like this. Joseph Wright with Iron Hands. Kevin Leonard with Slaanesh. Third place, Justin Curtis with Chaos Demons. Second place, Aaron Towler with Dark Angels. And Matt Estrada with, guess what, Jim? What faction?
AdMech.
You got it.
What do I win?
Yeah, win-win. So once again, Dark Angels take top and Cult of Mechanicus take 1-2. So both of them also going undefeated. So that's 10-0 based on the last two events we discovered. But it's interesting to see these Chaos Demon lists keep popping up. And the Slaanesh Demons, I mean, I guess all that speed, you know, fine, you got one turn of shooting. Hope you go first. So.
Yeah, and I mean, things like Fiends are really nice against shooting armies because you can't fall back. You know, you're already, like, armies like that already die pretty quickly to shooting. So it's like, you've already, like, factored that into, like, your game plan is that all your demonets are going to die anyways. So it's like, who cares if they died, you know?
Right.
And they got a lot of attacks to chew through infantry, soft infantry. So
I'll strike first. So yeah, even if you don't kill them in the first phase, they're going to swing again in your opponent's turn.
Exactly.
Yeah. So this is like the absolute opposite of the Lone Star Open, where Lone Star Open, everyone is complaining about terrain and everything going on with that part of the tournament. This would be the Gibraltar Grand Tournament, where I don't think anybody was complaining about terrain. they're posting quite a few pictures of what this place looks like, and it's immaculate. I was like, holy cow.
So I'm pretty sure the Gibraltar guys are the guys, the SN Battle Report guys, and they also run the what's the big crazy one with the super armies, the Gibraltar. I don't think it's happened yet, but it's the one on the cruise ship. Mm-hmm. It's like a very, very invite only event. It's like super prestigious. I don't think this wasn't it, I don't believe, but in that event, it's basically invite only. You get like, I think this year they're inviting all the various YouTube channels and podcast hosts and stuff like that. So should be pretty exciting to watch. But I know that one of their kind of standouts about that event is just like really high quality armies and just incredible tables as well. So,
right. So question for you, Jim, because it's something that came up in the after hours discussion with BCP from our talk last week. What makes a good tournament?
I guess for me, it's like three things. Probably that kind of boil down to, it's like, first, it's great tables. Second would be like that it's well run. So like it's run on time, it's organized. Like, you know, there's no problems, the logistical problems with the like actual running of the event. And obviously that also includes like a good venue. Is like having a nice venue. Like whether it's like, you know, but even if it's like not catered, but like making sure it's like air conditioned and there's lots of space and it's like not crowded and et cetera, et cetera. So those are kind of the key things when it comes to like just the logistics. And then ultimately for me, like, the big thing is just, you know, is it, for me, like personally, is like, did I have a good time and did I play some great games? Right. So is there a good mix of people? Is it like, I guess, is there a good vibe there? You know, size really doesn't matter to me. I've had some of the best events I've had have been smaller and a little bit more elite. But yeah, I think the biggest thing is just like logistics of the event, tables, terrain, venue. Is it run on time? Are the TOs organized? Great prize support always helps, but it's not necessarily important. But great like trophies is always fun too. But yeah. And then just like TOs that kind of know what they're doing and that feels like it's, you know, well run, but why do you ask?
Just interesting. Cause this, you look at this event and there's about, you know, I should probably see how many players there were exactly, but I'm looking at the venue and it's in this gorgeous hall, but it's, yeah, it's not the biggest event. They only have 50 players and great tables. And like I said, very prestigious. This is something that people will travel to. There'd be no, but Gibraltar is not a large area, you know, just by nature. So a lot of these guys did travel and probably say, well, it's only from England to Gibraltar. It's still, you know, decent. You know, by air and then probably by ferry to get there. So it's not an easy jaunt. It's not like you and I driving 2 or 3 hours to the next, you know, next major city. So it was just interesting. We brought up, you know, the typical topic we talk about with BC, with ITC right now, you know, bigger is better. And there's sort of that, there seems to be an uprising of, if you don't have the terrain and you don't have the space, stop selling tickets. Have the courage to say we're full and run the event properly.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. And so like, if you think about LVO, right? LVO is really big, right? And that's cool. But like, I don't
breaking
love
news LVO. Here. Thanks, Jim.
Yeah. But like, I guess the thing is like, I don't love LVO because of the size of it. I don't care that it's so big. What I like about LVO and what makes LVO so memorable is when I go there, I get to see the people, like everyone that, like all my mates are there, all my homies are there, and it's like a really good experience with all my friends, and the only reason they all go there is because it's LVO. Now, if LVO all of a sudden went to 100 players, and all my friends went, I'd still think it would be an amazing tournament. Things like this Gibraltar event, and there's other events like this. Like if you think of, I don't know, I'm just trying to think of some famous tournaments like. Attack X is coming up in BC. Mm-hmm. It's like kind of one of our majors, and it's a 4 hour drive, 4.5 hour drive from me. And every year it's my favorite event, even though it's only like 100-man tournament, sometimes 80, because all of like our bros are there. Everyone's there from the like, and it just feels like this really tight knit group of, you know, of everyone that like you haven't seen in a while. All my buddies from the island, people from like, you know, I see Alex McDougall from the interior. I see all of like local guys, but it's like, we all go and that camaraderie and that like assembly of all like our friends. That's like such a cool thing. Whereas if I go to say another great event in, I don't know, let's say I go to, Dice Hammer GT in California, right?
Right.
I personally, well, all my friends aren't there. There's a one or two people that I know there, but they're not all there. And so even though if the event itself is like, say, better run, right? Maybe it's got better tables. It won't feel like when I leave that event at the end, I'm not going to have that same like memory as I did going to this local tournament with all the homies, right? And so LVO is just like a very big version of that. And because there's so many players, there's so many people you know. And so it creates this really memorable experience. Obviously, you're in Vegas as well, which creates part of a memorable experience. Gibraltar is an amazing city. And that event, it's the same thing, right? It's such a famous event that like the same people go over and over again to that event. And I know even the way that their ticket sales are is like they give first priority to people that have gone in previous years. So you end up with this like very tight knit crew of people that go every year. And that like feeling of seeing these people that are from all over the world that you see once a year, maybe just at this one event, that itself is like so special. And so when I think about what makes a great tournament, it's like part of it is like who actually goes, right? And like, are you going to have like a great experience and catching up with everyone and you know, talking games after or beers and stuff like that? Like, that's such a big part of the hobby that I feel like sometimes we don't think about. When it comes to like events, especially events you travel to, for me, that's actually really important. And it's like a really fun part of the experience. And it's what makes a tournament more or less memorable than me. Obviously, if I win, that's also memorable, but it's not as memorable. If I like, you know, afterwards, I just go to my hotel and sleep. So that's kind of like, I don't know, my thoughts on it. But, and I know Gibraltar is very famous for that. Like the people that go are the same people every year because it's like the tournament to go to, you know? So it has this draw of like just really great people. And those people get to see each other once a year, especially if they're all across Europe, which means it's like this like once a year reunion almost with like your buddies. And that's a really cool, special feeling.
I appreciate you bringing that up. And those of you who are listening, if you also, yeah, throw it in the comments on our Facebook page. You know, what are some things that you look for from a tournament? I just had a reckoning over the last week, just trying to think about, okay, take a step back. You know, what makes a great tournament? I'm throwing one in November 6th and 7th, the Yakutia Onslaught. For those of you, tickets are available. And just trying to think, okay, what is a great experience? And then, you know, trying to prioritize what to get done between now and November. And, you know, it's just, I think you hit it on the head with the venue is really nice that we're using. So that's something, you know, it's got a decent location as well. And then now I start thinking like, all right, do we organize a evening event, because there's quite a few restaurants in the area, but make sure we get a reservation. It's, you know, most restaurants can handle 23 people separate checks without a reservation. So
yeah, and like, I mean, that's obviously ultimately comes down to your group,
right?
But and so I would encourage people that are listening, if you're like maybe new to tournaments and or you know, haven't been to an event or thinking of going to your first event, reach out to the people that are at the event. So one of my favorite memories is actually about 2 years ago, I was offered a vacation, a trip from my work down to Austin. And what did I do? I decided to time it with the Alamo Grand Tournament, which is in San Antonio, which is about an hour-ish south of Austin, I believe. And I didn't know anyone, right, going into Austin. Going to this event. So what I did was I posted in the Facebook group, basically, of the event. And I said, hey, guys, my name is Jim. I'm coming from Canada. I don't know anyone. And I'd love to like hang out with some people after the first day, meet people. If anyone wants to adopt me, only Canadian, let me know. And lo and behold, I had a very cool dude named Viet Wang, I think is his last name. He's like a streamer, just a really cool guy. From Austin area, Viet Nguyen, sorry. He's like a DJ. He's like a K-pop DJ, and he has his own painting studio called, I think he goes by DJ Sensation. I don't know if he still DJs, but he's got a really cool painting studio, commission painter as well. And he's obviously very, he's Texan, so he's got guns and all the cool stuff. So he basically was like Sensei Swag Mini Art. So he's an excellent, if you've ever guys have heard of his painting studio. So he basically was like, hey, come join us. Like, my name is like whatever. And I literally went and I hung out, and like in very typical like Texas hospitality, they like took me in, they adopted me. We went all went out drinking. We had dinner together, had such a fun night with them. And, yeah, like I still chat with those guys and like, they're all like awesome dudes. And like, I still have such a great memory of that event because I went and I created those like cool friendships. And obviously every time I see Viet, like I give him a big hug, and, I'm just really I'm jonesing to get back into Texas to play some events there because I want to see those guys again, right? Because they did such a good job of taking care of me and adopting me into their little group. So, you know, even if you don't know anyone, I would encourage you to reach out to the event, let people know that you're attending and that like you literally don't know anyone, and you know, maybe you'll get some cool dudes to adopt you and go hang out, and or girls, and just have a great time, right? So that's just like a one story. And not again, Alamo GT was a great event. I think I actually won second or best overall or something like that. It was just cool playing people down there and meeting people. And obviously I think we ended up at some crazy Texan mall, which I was in PF Chang's or something. I don't even know. It was some crazy Texas chains. And then they took me to Whataburger for the first time, which was really cool. So I'd never had that. It's not that good, to be honest. Sorry, Texans. It was just a great event. And that was like me doing that on my own. And that kind of like camaraderie and community is something that I find really cool. So I would encourage anyone that is going to an event that maybe doesn't know anyone, a traveling event, to at least reach out to the people there and try to like find some adoptive parents.
It's a really cool story, actually. Just kind of flinging yourself out there.
The best part was the GT is actually held at a church in San Antonio, and I was in Austin, and so I had to get to San Antonio, but the only way to get there was by cheaply was by bus. But the bus that I because I was staying in Austin, I didn't want to have to pay for a place in San Antonio for an extra night, so I took like the red eye bus, which I think left San Antonio or Austin around 3 a.m. And it got to San Antonio around 4:30 a.m. And obviously the venue didn't open until 7. So I just went into the venue and I just slept in front of it like a homeless person until the TO arrived. And I was like literally passed out on an army bag in front of the venue. And it's Texas, so it was like 26 degrees Celsius at night. So it was like perfectly warm, like sleeping weather. And I remember the TO just, I was like sleeping in front of the venue. He just like on a Warhammer, like a soft Warhammer bag. And he just like woke me up. He's like, get up. It's time to go.
Oh my God.
I don't recommend that part to everyone, but I always thought it was really funny.
Oh my God. Well, Whataburger just called. They're not sponsoring our podcast anymore.
Oh, shit. Sorry, guys.
That's right.
It's just not good. It reminds me of Burger King too much. I don't know. That's like a huge insult to Texans, but.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Looking at your top five from Gibraltar, by the way. In fifth place, Eduardo Munez with Drukhari. Fourth place, Zach Althrustra with Dark Angels. Third place, Malik Rubio with Cult of Mechanicus. Roots Dean Bakers in second, and Manny Chima in first with Cult Mechanicus. So you got Manny went a perfect 6-0, Rude with Drukhari, and Malik both went 5-1 as well as Zach. Actually, the whole top five actually went 5-1. So
yeah, Manny's list is just like absurd. It's got like 120 Rangers and Vanguard combined. That's just, and like 27 packs, like not, and then characters, like that's all it is.
It's unbelievable. Always finds these wild skew lists.
It's funny because like people have been really ripping into him because he's been posting like, because he's got his own Glasshammer yep. Gaming, I think, their YouTube and stuff. He's been posting tactics like links to like his videos, like how to strategy to win with this AdMech list. And everyone's just like ripping into him because they're just like, what are you talking about? It's AdMech. Like, put him on the board, shoot, and win the game. Like, there's no strategy, dude.
Right.
Poor guy.
Yeah.
He's just trying to help out the community and everyone's like ripping into him. But, I mean, serves him right. Manny's an excellent player. And like, I just wish he challenged himself a little bit more to take some like, you know, give himself a bit more of a challenge rather than just always taking the most like broken out.
I still remember.
He is the penultimate meta chaser.
Yeah. I remember his Imperial Guard list, or not Imperial, excuse me, Imperial Fist list from LVO.
Yeah,
that was brutal. I was like, what?
I was not
looking forward to playing that. Oh, successfully dodged it. So there we are. As you may have noticed, not a whole lot of big names in that top 10 in terms of the ITC top 10. So looking over that, there were actually no changes in the ITC top 10. So we'll see if there are any other movement in the lower half. Got a lot of feedback from my little graph there of the ITC top 10. You can find that on our Facebook page. And you can see top 10, how they shifted around from the previous week, as well as their most recent event. So we'll go through that. Look for that later in the week, usually like Wednesday or Thursday. Jim, what do you got for streaming events this week?
Not much, actually, guys. It's going to be a bit of a slower week. I'm doing a Politics and Plastic on Friday with Wyatt Turk on gatekeeping, which is going to be fun. And then Thursday, I believe I'll be back with the Best Overall Show with David. I did have one shout out, though. for those of you that are not aware, I'll be participating in Charity Hammer on August 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th. So it's going to be 3 days of streaming Warhammer with a lot of the top players around the country. I'll be there going down there with Alex McDougall and JT McDowell from Canada. We'll be the three inaugural Canadians. I'll probably get walloped because the three of us Canadians probably have less games than any one single American that's attending, just because we've been mostly in lockdown. But it's for a really good cause, raising money for kids' charity. So if you guys are interested in more info, I did a 1 hour interview with Colin Sherman on Tuesday on my channel. But you can also just check out charityhammer.com. Donate if you can. We're going to be doing lots of basically 3 days straight of streaming. And I have three or four games lined up. It's actually really interesting because there's a 32-person single elimination GT happening at the event. And they seeded everyone in the GT based on their kind of 2 years of ELO-like ratings in the ITC. And somehow, even though I haven't barely played a year, I'm still number fourth in the rankings based on like my ELO, my 2 years of ELO. So I'm actually fourth in the GT seeding, which is completely like not representative of my playability at the moment, which means I get to play, I think, like the 24th rank or something, or the 28th rank player, which is Tyler Bortel, who's also from Portland, Oregon, I think, or around those parts. And we're actually going to be driving up because I'm actually going to be down in Portland for the few days before the event and then driving up from Portland. So keep an eye out for that game. If you guys are for listeners, if you want to see me hopefully not embarrass myself completely. And then other than that, I'm participating in a hot wing eating contest. Well, it's not hot wing eating contest. It's basically like we're doing like a thing of like hot ones. So it'll be spice eating contest. So going to be eating hot wings consecutively, hotter and hotter spice wings. And obviously I got to represent as a brown person, my spice eating skills. So I will be participating in that. So if you want to see me suffer and be in lots of pain with a few other white people, make sure to tune into that as well. Cause I'm definitely not going to let them beat me in whatever game or art there is. So
that sounds really cool. Actually, the Charity Hammer is always a huge event, and watching people scorch their taste buds with chicken wings is also always entertaining. So
yeah, I think last year they raised around $14,000 for a few different charities, and I think this year the goal is $20,000. So if you're able, check out charityhammer.com, make sure to donate. Goes a long way to help the children.
Sounds great. Appreciate that. So beyond that, leave us a review. We haven't asked for a review in quite some time. Love to hear what you guys think of the podcast as well as our Facebook page. More updates throughout the week along the Facebook page. Ray should be back next week giving us a full rundown of the Rio, which is the venue of the Vegas Open.
And he didn't just go just to check it out, did he? He's obviously doing it. You make it sound like he's just so selfless. And he's like, yes. Guys, you know, I just for the good of the audience, I'm going to go down to Vegas and just suffer through a few days at the Rio just to make sure that I can give you guys an accurate report. Like, you make it sound like he's like this very selfless man who's like, you know, sacrificing his time and money for such a noble cause. But he must be down there for some other reason, right?
I'm forging a narrative. This work with me.
Yeah. Ray the Noble.
So yeah, actually, I don't know the exact, but he's there. He's there with family, and he's actually been to several of the venues there. So I think he might be planning some sort of event there, and he's just trying to find the right venue for himself. But yeah, he's actually at the, he messaged me earlier. I'm at the Rio. If you've got questions, let me know. I'm like, I expect a full report when you come back.
Yeah, I'd like a full review of the entire room service menu, please. Yes, right?
Exactly.
If you can. if you could order everything on the menu and provide a report on a head ranking on most delicious to least delicious items. Thank you.
Maybe. Biggest thing I would love to know, though, actually, I have to ask when he comes back, is how far is it from the bank of elevators from the room to where we're actually going to play the game? Because that was one thing that was always precarious at Delphio. It was like, oh, this hallway is going to be fun carrying my
army. Well, I guess it depended on which tower you're at. Luckily, the first year I was in the tower that was closest to the floor, but the second year I was in the one that was farthest. So having to carry my army around across the entire casino floor was not exciting.
Yeah, that's not exciting at all. Yeah. And then the stupidity of, I got to show my arm band, but it's under my tray. How do I do this without that tipping over my tray? Yeah, that was always a fun challenge.
Yeah, hopefully. I'm excited for LVO. I'll be actually down there for the Las Vegas team tournament. It's October, but So that should be exciting. Hopefully I'll be able to check that out. And one other piece of news for my American friends. They, as of August 9th, you are now able to travel to Canada if you're proof of fully vaccinated. So for any of you guys interested in America to come up to Canada for an event or just to hang out with me, you can now do that. So although for some reason the rule has not reciprocated, so I still can't travel down there for non-essential reasons, which sucks. But I'm sure it'll be unless it's by air, which is weird.
That's very strange. Okay, babe. Yeah. That could be a great opportunity. Anything else, Jim?
Nope, that's it.
All right. So another great show. We'll talk to you guys next week. My name's Eric.
I'm Jim.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus Podcast.